Every Monday, round about this time, we're joined by Rich Preston to give us a world outlook from a BBC perspective all the way from the UK. Rich Preston, I hope you are well, sir. Nice talking again.
Very well, thank you, Lester. Good morning to you.
Excellent. We're going to be starting closer to us here in Africa on tomorrow. Kenyans go to the polls to vote in presidential elections. Give us a rundown. Who's running? What's at stake? And why does this matter so much to Africa and also global geopolitics at this particular point?
Yeah, so polls open at 6 o'clock tomorrow local time. That's 5 a.m. South Africa time. 290 constituencies across the country, from urban sprawls like Nairobi and Mombasa, right up to the rural highlands. Now, of course, Kenya is one of Africa's biggest economies. It's the sixth behind Nigeria, you guys, Algeria, Egypt, and Morocco. So, you know, on an African level, but also an international level, this is huge, because especially, you know, in the region, it's, you know, one of the most important democracies in Africa, and especially in that corner, you know, its neighbors, Somalia, Ethiopia, Tanzania, Uganda, various ongoing issues which kind of question their stability. Kenya, really the most influential country in East Africa, so it matters. Now, there are four candidates in the running, but only two clear front runners. They are William Ruto. He's the current deputy president, and Raila Odinga, the main opponent to the current president. The guy who's leaving office is Uhuru Kenyatta. He's been president since 2013, brands himself the digital president, but was accused of organizing attacks on supporters of his opponent, Raila Odinga, after the 2007 election. At one point, he actually faced indictment by the International Criminal Court on charges of crimes against humanity, and the British and American governments warned Kenyans against re-electing him. He's always refuted those accusations, and he was re-elected. But the reason I mention his past, Lester, is because for this election campaign, Mr. Kenyatta is not supporting his current vice president, William Ruto. He's supporting his aforementioned rival, Raila Odinga. That would be like Donald Trump coming out and telling people to vote for Hillary Clinton. Now, President Kenyatta, he's, you know, part of this dynastic family, son of Kenya's first ever president, and his current deputy, William Ruto, says that this is all about political dynasties, and that Raila Odinga and President Kenyatta are working together to keep power in the country consolidated. Now, William Ruto is campaigning on the fact he isn't one of these political dynasties. He's for ordinary Kenyans, the poor. You know, that's significant because Kenya's unemployment rate is 40% among young people. He's called himself the hustler president. He talks about a hustler nation. Raila Odinga, the main contender for the vote. This is his fifth shot at the presidency, and he campaigns on the fact he's an experienced politician, but actually that might work against him. He's 77. He's seen as being part of this political dynasty, out of touch with real Kenyans, and just looking for this presidential office as a bit of a badge of honor. Now, opinion polls suggest William Ruto is going to win a majority of votes, but as I mentioned, there are four candidates, and if one of them doesn't win more than 50%, it goes to a runoff vote.
Really, really is interesting, because wasn't it also the phenomenon, and we spoke about, you use the American example, wasn't it a phenomenon where, I think it was the Bushes, also sort of tacitly endorsed Hillary Clinton, who would have extended the Clinton dynasty in American presidential politics. Didn't they support her in a campaign against Donald Trump?
They did, yeah. Interesting parallels there. I'd not actually thought of that. But yeah, and there is this real, as we saw with the election of Donald Trump, there is this real pushback against this idea of the political elite, idea that politics is owned by certain families. And that really is what William Ruto is working on, because, as I said, current president Uhuru Kenyatta, son of the first ever president, Raila Odinga, another, you know, one of the richest families in Kenya. And William Ruto is pointing at these two and saying, look at these guys. How dare they hang on to power? But of course, you know, they turn around and say, well, you know, we're here working for the people. Our families have been doing it for years and years. As I said, Raila Odinga says, you know, I've been working in politics my whole life. I'm the voice of experience. I'm the safe choice. William Ruto is a dodgy bet.
Rich, you called it last week something to be looking out for, and we asked the question, why on earth would the Chinese want to target the third most important person in American presidential politics? Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, is second in line to the presidency in the rules of succession. She flew to Taiwan. Military exercises and test rockets fired into the air. And we asked the question, why would they want to show this level of force? And that is continuing this week. Concerns over Chinese militarization across the Southeast Asian Sea.
Yeah, I think this story is not going away anytime soon, Lester. I mean, first of all, these military movements we saw last week, a direct response to Nancy Pelosi's visit. Unprecedented military drills in the area. And it's important to note they were announced with just a few hours' notice. That, you know, this is not something that Beijing announced months ago. These had about 48 hours' notice and all these troops mustered. That is significant. They were due to finish yesterday. But guess what? They're continuing as we speak. China says Taiwan is its territory. It's carrying out these exercises within international law. It's doing nothing wrong. And there's no real sign of when this military muscle flexing might end. Now, obviously, that's antagonistic towards Taiwan, Beijing, but also other countries in the region as well. South Korea, the Philippines, you know, all these Chinese naval ships suddenly around their shores. It's just generally unsettling for the region. In addition to that, there's the diplomatic front. Now, China last week said it would pull back on various diplomatic issues from the US. One of the key ones, climate. It said it wasn't going to engage with the US when discussing climate change issues and protecting the environment. Now, we're talking about the world's two most powerful countries here. Ideological differences aside, these countries need to be able to get along on issues like climate change for the benefit of the whole world. There's also discussions around global trade, international development that China just now will not engage with Washington on. China's angry at America, but America is unlikely to back down or apologize because to do so would be seen as being weak. The US has accused Beijing of being irresponsible, both on its military action and on these diplomatic channels. Of course, Beijing just saying it won't engage with Washington. So a bit of a standoff here. Interesting what it's doing to people in Taiwan. Now, years ago, people would have seen themselves as a mix of Taiwanese, Chinese, depending on their kind of family heritage. But now the numbers are shifting. Most people are now saying that they are just Taiwanese. The number of people who identify as being both Taiwanese and Chinese is going down. Now, most Taiwanese people don't believe China will invade or that there will be a war. So we can take some solace in that. But it shows that there is this real resentment in Taiwan pushing up towards Beijing. And of course, we have seen that elsewhere. Just Hong Kong, just a couple of years ago, for example, this resentment towards Chinese rule increasing and how that kind of boiled over in Hong Kong. One issue worth watching with this is technology. Now, most of the world's tech is powered by computer chips made in Taiwan. So if this military action continues, if Taiwan starts to potentially struggle to get its biggest export out of the country, it might have an impact for people around the world when it comes to their cars, their smartphones, their laptops. We'll have to watch and see how things shape up this week between Beijing and Washington.
And finally, Rich, flowers galore in Belgium on Friday. What's happening?
Yeah, this is just one to cheer you up after all that miserable news. This is called the Brussels flower carpet. Normally happens every 2 years, but guess what? Last 2 years, it hasn't happened because of COVID. So lots of people very excited about its return. It's an incredible sight, Lester. This is its 50th year, and 1,600 square meters of the Grand Place Square in Brussels are completely covered in begonias, dahlias, chrysanthemums in particular, and along with kind of grasses and barks, 100 volunteers put together this beautiful artwork, this carpet. They make it entirely out of flowers in under 6 hours. This year's theme is a callback to the first ever event called the Arabesque Carpet. So beautiful Arabic patterns and colours laid out on the Grand Place, this World Heritage site. It will be there for 4 days. And of course, in this day and age, highly Instagrammable. So come Friday, open up your social media, look for the Brussels flower carpet, and you're guaranteed to see some incredible pictures.
Rich Preston, looking forward to chatting to you again next week. Stay well. Have a good one.
Thank you, Lester. Good to talk to you.